previously.
In terms of intercourse frequency, we know that there are some couples who feel that they should be having intercourse every single day to achieve pregnancy. And while that may be good for other reasons, and certainly not to take away from personal enjoyment, it's certainly not that necessary to have intercourse that frequently.
This is Beyond the Birds and Bees on Austin's Talk 1370.
Good afternoon. I'm Dr. Thomas Fawn with Dr. Kaylin Silverberg, and this is the show Beyond the Birds and Bees on Talk Radio 1370. We have, we're part of the Texas Fertility Center. There's actually four physicians, and we're on MOPAC. Our website is www.texasfertility.com, which has even more information than we can cover in 1 hour. Please don't hesitate to check it out for more information. We are board-certified subspecialists in reproductive endocrinology. What that really means is that we, after medical school, we spent 4 years of training to become trained in obstetrics and gynecology, but then spent an additional 2 to 3 years of formal training in infertility. And this is the focus of our practice. In fact, even though we're board-certified in obstetrics and gynecology, we really don't practice that. We don't deliver babies anymore. We don't do hysterectomies and things like that. We only work with couples trying to help them achieve pregnancy. This is one of several shows that we've begun. Kaylin, tell us what we've covered a little bit before, and I'd really like to hear about the birds and the bees last week.
Well, thanks, Thomas. First of all, I want to remind our callers that we're live. So today is Saturday, June the 5th, and we really would love to take calls. So if you have a question about anything that we're going to talk about today or even anything we've covered in the last several weeks, please feel free to call us. The call-in number is 390-1370. That's 390-1370. So in the past several weeks, we've really tried to present a kind of a broad overview about fertility and even about just pregnancy in general. So we had a show called What to Expect When You're Not Expecting. That was last week's show, and we really tried to cover issues that couples who are trying to conceive but have really not been able to, what are they going through? So some of the emotional aspects, and I know that we're going to cover some of that again today because we had lots of questions since last Saturday about, you know, other issues that we didn't cover, and people wanted, I think, us to expand a little bit more about that. We also had a show on misconceptions about conception, where we talked about kind of the myths that are out there. Some things like, you know, just go out and take a vacation and you'll come back and you'll be pregnant, or just relax, and, you know, the effect of stress on fertility, and lots of other types of misconception. The other issue that we really tried to cover was this whole birds and bees, which is a fascinating campaign. If you go to our website, you talked about it a minute ago, it's www.txfertility.com. You can click on our Facebook logo at the bottom of the new website. And in fact, our website is brand new. It just went up in the past week or so. It is extraordinarily informative. Most websites, I think, you know, Thomas, have 15, 20 pages. Ours, I think, is somewhere between 160 and 170 pages. So it just provides tremendous information for couples who are going through not just infertility, but couples who suffer from endometriosis and fibroids. If you want to find out more about reproductive surgery, any of the things that we talk about on the show and other aspects of fertility. But going back to the birds and bees, there was a national campaign. It started in Baltimore, Maryland in February, and they actually brought this campaign to Austin a couple of weeks ago. It's called the Birds and Bees Campaign, which kind of fits in nicely with our title for our show. But there is a website I'd like to refer patients to for that as well. It's www.increasemychances.org/Austin. It's /Austin. And that's a website also that really just provides a lot of information about fertility and fertility options and fertility treatment. And so the companies that sponsored this did some kooky stuff. They dressed some actors up like birds and bees, and the whole kind, they had them marching all around Austin. So they were at the Capitol for a while. I know they went to a couple of flea markets. They went to a Round Rock Express baseball game. I think we won that night, actually. So that was great too. Yeah. But so it's kind of an interesting thing, and it's really designed to increase awareness about fertility because, you know, we're all taught about the birds and bees, but sometimes birds and bees can't make babies.
I just love the clip on television of this campaign with them in paddle boats on town. Like, that was really cool.
All right.
But right, it is not so easy for many couples. At least 15% of couples have trouble conceiving. 15% of couples in reproductive age, of course, have troubles conceiving. And this can be particularly frustrating. I think couples, individuals will think that maybe I'm not going to grow up and be president of the United States. Maybe I'm not going to be a very wealthy person. But to be able to have a baby is something almost you feel entitled to. It's almost like I should be born with arms and legs and those sorts of things. So
sure.
That is really – that's a really stressful thing. The other thing, too, a lot of patients that we see have been very successful in their education and their jobs. And they've learned as they've grown up, if they work harder, they usually attain their goal. And it seems like once that this becomes a problem – the harder you work at it, the more difficult it becomes. And stress becomes a real component of this.
That's just so true. I mean, you know, just the way you said it is just exactly right on. I mean, we have a lot of our couples, you know, we have couples from all walks of life, couples with all occupations, couples who've had kids before, couples who haven't had kids before. But you're so right. I mean, number one, our couples feel like, and I think rightly so, fertility should be a right. I mean, it's something that you shouldn't have to think about. It's something that you shouldn't have to work hard at. It's something that should come naturally. And I know that we talked, Lisa and I talked about this last week, that infertility is a disease, and it's no different than diabetes, no different than heart disease, no different than high blood pressure. Our patients don't say, you know what, I've got to get a disease. Let me pick an easy one. Let me go stand in the infertility line. The difference, though, is that infertility is curable. And as we touched on in the last few weeks, you know, 85 to 88% of the patients who walk in our door and stick with the plan walk out with a baby. You can't say that about high blood pressure. You know, it's unfortunate. You can't say that about diabetes. You can't say that about heart disease.
Yeah, I think that's really true. If you think about disease processes in medicine, most of the time what you're really doing is putting individuals in remission. In other words, they have high blood pressure. They take their medication. They're well controlled, and they can live a normal life, but they have to stay on the medication, so it's really not curable.
Sure.
If you have an infertile patient, she gets pregnant, and she carries that baby, she has been cured. That is a big deal.
That's right. And so frequently she'll have a baby, and then the next time, you know, she'll come back, or she won't even come back. She'll try to have a baby again, and lo and behold, she can conceive on her own.
Well, that isn't true. I tell you, it really is true, particularly for these that don't have just absolute blocks to fertility, like maybe the woman's lost fallopian tubes or something like that. That is really true. It almost makes them more fertile. And probably what it does is that the pregnancy hormonal changes do suppress immunological changes and endometriosis, which we'll be talking about over the next several weeks, and makes these women more fertile.
Sure. I mean, we talk with our patients sometimes that pregnancy is, you know, it's the great equalizer. It's kind of like hitting that reset button on the pinball machine. You know, I mean, you have a problem getting pregnant, and you have to go through surgery, or you have to go through fertility treatment, you have to go through ovulation induction, something. But then you have your baby, and lo and behold, you try and get pregnant again, you stop using contraception, and bam, you get pregnant on your own spontaneously. And that was one of the things we talked about under this misconceptions about conception, that, you know, oh my gosh, I heard stories about so-and-so who had to go through all this treatment to try and get pregnant the first time, and then they got pregnant the second time by themselves. Did they really not need that treatment the first time? And the answer is no, they absolutely did need that treatment the first time. It's just that, again, infertility is curable in so many cases. And also, it's just a reset. Pregnancy is just an absolute reset, and it gives you your body the opportunity to do what it's supposed to be doing so that the next time, hopefully, you won't need any assistance.
And it tells us a lot once a couple conceives. It tells us that the sperm from the husband can penetrate an egg. It tells us that the fallopian tube can pick up the egg. It can be nourished and moved into the uterus. So it tells us a lot is happening. So it really is definitely a reset button.
Sure.
You know, you talked over the last couple of weeks about the emotional part of this, and this is really important. And one of the things that I brought up on misconceptions about conception was about just go out and adopt and you'll get pregnant. And actually, we've looked at the data. It turns out that couples who adopt they're less likely to conceive than those that don't. And the reason is because those that don't adopt are more likely to continue to want to work through their problem and eventually find a solution. But I just remember that everyone talks about the couple that, well, we gave up, or we just went out and adopted and became pregnant. I tell you, some of the things are not real logical. For instance, I had a patient who had a little endometriosis, and she decided not to go beyond her laparoscopy to treat endometriosis, and so she just stopped, and she became pregnant 47 months later. Now, What does that mean? I mean, why wasn't it month 46 or month 49? It just, some of it doesn't make sense. Even when couples have decided that they're going to quit pursuing treatment, there's still a chance that they'll become pregnant. What we can do is make the chances of that significantly higher each month that they try.
Sure. We really shorten the duration of infertility. And what we talk about a lot in our office is subfertility as opposed to infertility. You know, infertility just sounds so absolute. You know, you're fertile, which means you can have children, or you're infertile, which means you can't have children. But so many of our couples have subfertility. So let me tell you about the difference. You know, if you're fertile, that's obvious. Everybody knows what that means. But who is truly infertile? Well, a woman who's had her fallopian tubes removed. If she doesn't have treatment, there is no way she's going to be able to get pregnant. A guy who has absolutely no sperm. Without some kind of intervention or donor sperm, there is no way he's going to be able to cause a pregnancy. Those people are infertile. But when you look at the overwhelming majority of patients, at least I know in my practice, and I'm sure in yours as well, the overwhelming majority of patients aren't really infertile. They're subfertile, which means that their chance for pregnancy in any given month is less than it should be for other types of couples. So why don't we use that as a segue? Why don't you want to talk a little bit about the normal fertility rates?
I think that's real important, because when patients come in and maybe they've been through a few treatments, not a lot, but some, I always ask them, what was the expectation that that particular treatment would work? And what I learned in that conversation is that we really don't know what the chance, a lot of couples don't know what the chance of getting pregnant is in a given month. And so when I tell them normal fertile couples, the chance of conceiving each month is 20%. They're kind of like, no way. And I will admit to them that our mothers and fathers told us it'd be 120%.
Right.
But it really is 20 to 25%. And some of the treatments that they've been through are not even bringing them up to the 20% level. Mm-hmm. And I think it's really helpful to put it in perspective, not to discourage a couple that the chance of getting pregnant may be what seems to be low to them, but that if they do a treatment that's a really good treatment and they don't conceive, that's disappointing but not discouraging. It's very important. And we're kind of really upfront with patients when we say, this won't work or this will work, hang in there, we just need to try it again.
Yeah, and the best thing is that most of our patients, most of our couples have multiple options. I mean, they've got, it's not like there's one specific treatment, and if they do that, they've got a chance for pregnancy, and if they don't do that, they have zero chance. So most of the time, we'll be able to fortunately present our couples with a variety of options. It's like, you know, almost a buffet, and you can say, well, there's advantages and disadvantages of this treatment. There's advantages and disadvantages of that treatment. You know, some treatments are more aggressive. Some treatments are less aggressive. Some treatments are more invasive. Some are less invasive. Some are more expensive. Some are less expensive. So we can really design a program around what the specific diagnoses are that a couple has, and then design something, some kind of treatment to outline a path to success for them. So even if we, and what we, you know, what we clearly try and do in our practice is we try and start with the least aggressive, least expensive, least invasive treatment, and gradually, if we need to, turn up the volume, so to speak. We help them march through the array of treatments. We try and direct them, almost serving as a guide, to try and negotiate our way and their way through the minefield out there to try and get them to their ultimate goal.
I think that's really important. I think it's important to lay out all these options for them so that they can kind of decide what they want to choose to utilize and then how quickly they want to move through the options. Because if you're in your 40s, you need to move fairly quickly and be very aggressive. If you're in your mid-20s, then you can take your time a little bit more. But I think we need to really be sure that these are tailor-made for the couples, and it's so dependent on the age of the woman.
Sure. I mean, that's something that we've touched on pretty much every show so far is age, and I'm sure we'll get to it in our next segment as well, because age is just so important. And so what we'd like to do now, I think we're up against a break, and so I think we're going to need to take a break here. What I'd like to do is remind our listeners to please call in with any questions that you have. It's 390-1370. Again, it's 390-1370. We're happy to take calls. We hope that you'll join us after this break. We're going to discuss a lot of topics related to when do you need to worry, how do you get started, who should you see, what's really involved with the fertility evaluation. We'll talk more about the evaluation itself. And again, we're live in Austin, Texas on Saturday, June the 5th, talking with the specialist from Texas Fertility Center about Beyond the Birds and Bees.
Welcome back to Beyond the Birds and Bees on Austin's Talk 1370.
Hi, I'm Dr. Thomas Fawn with Dr. Kaylin Soverberg, and we're back after the break. This is Beyond the Birds and the Bees, and we're live on AM 1370. Our website is www.txfertility.com. And for any questions, please give us a call at 390-1370. And we right before the break, we were talking about several things, and I kind of wanted to go back, if I could, Kaylin, just a little bit and pick up a little more about the emotional part, because I think it's just such an important area. And I when I talk with couples, they're really stressed about what they're going through, and every one of them asks me, is stress the cause of the infertility? And it is really, really rare, I think, unless it's interfering with sexual function or ovulation or something like that. And I tell patients that you can't just say, go home and relax. Personally, I think that makes them more tense, don't you?
Absolutely.
Yeah, so that doesn't work.
And
so,
people tell me all the time, go home and relax. And I know, I can tell you from personal experience, it doesn't work.
And some of this is our personality, right, Dr. Soverberg?
Yes, sir, Dr. Vaughn.
And I'm the same, too. So it's real important. The other thing, too, that I think is important, and you touched on it a week or two ago, and that's how we process this. Guys are fix-it people. And they have real difficulty even talking about it if they can't fix it. It's just their nature. Women process a lot by talking. And the guys kind of react negatively about talking about it because it puts pressure on them to fix it. And they can't fix it, so they don't want to talk about it, which creates a little bit more frustration with the women.
That is so true.
And so what I've told the women, the couples, is for the men, you've got to talk about it occasionally. Turn off the football game and sit down and listen and realize that your wife is not asking you to fix it. She just wants to talk about it. And I can tell you a couple of times my wife will ask me a question and I will cut her off and try to give her the answer. And she'll say, would you just listen to me for a
while?
Now, that never happens with Kaylin.
No, are you kidding? At least let me finish the question. Give me the courtesy of hearing the entire question. How many times have I heard that? Oh, my gosh.
So important. And so to go back to this, I also tell the woman, you can't talk about it all the time. So, like, we work 5 days a week. Maybe we work seven, but five days a week, and then take off on the weekend. So what we need to do is that we need for the couples to think about talking about it at some time, but agreeing to not talk about it. Maybe on the weekends. Go out, go to eat, go to the show. No, where the guy knows that the topic's not going to come up. Don't you think it's good to compartmentalize that?
Yeah, you have to have a safe space. You have to have kind of a safe place where you know that, you know what, tonight we're just going to go out and have fun. We're going to go to dinner. We're going to go to a movie. We're just going to relax. We're going to just not, we're going to put this issue, which is kind of the 800-pound gorilla that's kind of always accompanying them in the room, we're going to kind of put that issue on hold for a little bit. And, in fact, speaking of putting things on hold, we have a caller on line one. We have Renee on line one.
Hi, I have a question. One of my husband's testicles is smaller than the other one. Is that going to affect our fertility at all?
Yeah, that's a great question, Renee. Thanks. First of all, thanks so much for calling in.
You're welcome.
The issue of testicular size is important because the overwhelming volume of a man's testicle are cells that result in sperm production. So when a testicle shrinks, and it can do that for a variety of different reasons that we'll get into in just a minute, when one testicle is smaller than the other, it really can indicate a problem. It may indicate a problem with blood flow to that testicle. It may indicate a previous abnormality, for example, something that he was even born with. So, it may have been, it's important to know if that testicle used to be the same size as the other one, and then over time it's shrunk, because that can indicate, again, something wrong with blood flow. It may be that you think that one testicle is smaller than the other, and so you think that that one's shrinking, but, God forbid, it may be that, in fact, the other one has a mass in it. And so, a couple of times a year, we send a guy off to a urologist and get a diagnosis of testicular cancer back because couples think that, my left testicle is a little smaller than my right testicle. When in fact, the investigation's done, it turns out that the right testicle is actually larger than the left because, in fact, there is a mass there. Most masses are benign. There are lots of things that cause cysts within the testicle. But unfortunately, there are also malignant issues that can be involved as well.
I think the most important thing is what you said, and that is when there's anything that's a little bit abnormal, get an evaluation. Urologists do this all the time. I mean, women go to their gynecologist more frequently for their annual exam and pap smear. Guys never go to the doctor if they can get away with it.
That's
so
for sure.
This is a time that it is really worthwhile for them to have a checkup.
Okay, well, thank you so much.
Thanks so much for the call. And again, we're live on Saturday, June the 5th. Our call-in number is 390-1370. So if you have any questions, please, again, call 390-1370. So, Thomas, back to stress. How do you, you know, you gave some really good, effective tips for talking to couples about how to kind of deal with this issue and maybe outlining some times that you should discuss it, maybe outlining some times when you kind of need to take a break from it. Any other tips, any other ideas?
Well, I think it's important that all of us deal with stress in a very healthy way, and that is exercise. Exercise is very important. Try to be in shape. Eat properly. It turns out that women can really over-exercise, so we have to be a little bit careful with that as well. But exercise is one of the better ways to relieve stress, and I think the patients, the couples really report that that's helpful. What happens is that they're busy, and then they have their time to exercise, and then they feel tired and don't want to exercise. I think the fatigue a lot of times is a reflection of the stress.
Sure,
don't you
I agree
think it with
is.
That?
Oh yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And plus, I think that, you know, we live in Central Texas, right? And you know, I've had couples tell me over the last few weeks, especially, yeah, I have been exercising, but it's just so hard to work out now, and it's just I just don't have the energy. And I'm thinking to myself, you know what? I don't either, but it's 95 degrees outside. I mean, you know, you just walk from the hospital to your car, you walk back into the office, or, you know, it zaps you. And, you know, you got to go in and get some water and drink it. So it's important to stay well hydrated. And I know that that's important. But something else I wanted to talk about is just about stress in general, because people are so focused on stress, and it's like they want a magic bullet. And they ask, you know, well, how much stress is normal? And that question is just unfortunately not answerable. I tell all my patients, you know, there's no such thing as a stress scale. And you're 4.2 on the stressometer. And, you know, we really need to get you below 3.6 so that you get pregnant. And, you know, as silly as it sounds and as tragic as it sounds, you know, right now there are couples in Haiti after the earthquake who are getting pregnant. There are couples in Afghanistan in the middle of a war zone who are getting pregnant. And, you know, there's not much more stressful activity than those things that are happening. And, you know, certainly with everything that's going on in the economy right now with this recession and, you know, the threat of maybe it's going to be a double dip recession, people are losing their jobs, companies are scaling back on coverage for all kinds of benefits, all kinds of treatments, infertility included, all those things raise stress. With the recession again, more and more people are being asked to work longer and longer hours because companies don't want to go out and hire other employees. And with an increase in workload comes, again, an increase in stress. So you wake up. I mean, if you think about it from our couple's perspective, you wake up in the morning. You're faced with a long day. You get to work. It turns out to be longer than you think it's going to be. You've got to, you know, leave in the middle for a doctor's appointment. You know that when you come home, you got to talk to your husband about what happened at the doctor's appointment. You got to talk about, okay, when are you going to have intercourse? Are you not going to have intercourse? Or are you getting ready for an in vitro fertilization cycle? Or are you getting ready for an insemination? None of those issues in and of themselves are insurmountable. But when you lump one issue on top of another, oh my gosh, it just brings you down.
And don't forget, during that day when they're getting out to come to the office, they're in Austin traffic.
Yeah.
I mean, what else could go wrong, right?
Well, what else could be in Houston traffic. It could be a lot worse.
Well, sometimes you wonder. But not the concept of there's a lot of things going on in the world and people get pregnant with a lot of the stress is not to downplay the stress that our couples are feeling, but for them to recognize they're normal.
Absolutely.
They are completely normal.
Absolutely.
And we have to find ways to cope with that. And I think that when these couples feel like exercise, I'm really too tired, that's when they need to do it the most. Don't you think?
Absolutely.
I mean, that's when you really got to push through it.
For sure. And something else that we're doing at Texas Fertility is we are sponsoring you know, TFC are the initials of our group. It stands for Texas Fertility Center, but we've also adopted a new strategy that it stands for Total Fertility Care. And so for Total Fertility Care, we're trying to treat not just the numbers and not just the eggs and not just the sperm and not just the tubes. We're really trying to treat the whole person and the whole couple. And so as part of that, we've established this wellness series. And just to tell our listeners, our next wellness seminar is going to be on June the 29th. It's going to be in our offices, which are located on Mopac, just south of Far West. It's going to be from 6:30 to 8:30 p.m. We always bring in an expert in their field. We've had Mark Moore come down from Waco to talk about weight reduction. We've had Tara Joyner come in and talk about stress and issues involved there. On June the 29th, we're going to have Val Granoff, who is another outstanding mental health professional who works with lots of our couples, and she's going to come in and she's going to talk about coping with the emotional aspects of infertility. So again, that's on June the 29th in our office, Mopac, just south of Far West, from 6:30 to 8:30 in the evening. And we would welcome people to come. And if they want to, they can always email us at info@txfertility.com to get more information, or they can call us on the phone at 451-0149.
These are just great seminars. Please take advantage of them. I think you'll find them very helpful, and they have been successful.
Well, how about if we move on for a minute? I want to just shift gears to just a little bit, even though we're going to stay on kind of the same topic. When do you tell your couples that they should really start worrying about not getting pregnant? I mean, you know, what if a couple is, you know, the woman's 21 and she's been trying for 2 or 3 months, or she's 43 and she's been trying for 6 months? When should she start to worry?
Well, this is real important because we really don't see them until they do start worrying. And they've been worrying for a long time, and it's better to come early than late. And I've often told my patients that I wish that every couple who gets married and comes home from their honeymoon would have to come talk to us about fertility and age and this concept of how long do you try on your own before you seek help, because that would be really helpful. Because I can't tell you how many people go, I wish I'd been here 2 years ago.
Sure.
Or I've taken Clomid for 2.5 years and no. I mean, we're going, no wonder it hasn't worked. But I think this is real important. First off, couples who have been sexually active for 6 to 12 months, young couples, and are not pregnant, really should seek help, because this is saying sex is not working. And I think as couples get older and the women get older, even though it may be a little harder to get pregnant and maybe it takes longer, they need to come sooner. They really need to see us at 6 months.
Well, is that 6 to 12 months? Is that arbitrary? I mean, how'd you come up with 6 months or 12 months? Well,
yeah, the definition of infertility is actually being sexually active for a year without contraception and having not conceived.
Is that true at all ages, or does that change as women get older? Or
as you get beyond the mid-30s, it's considered to be at 6 months. And that's real important because you don't have much time. I mean, the clock is ticking a bit.
Sure. Sure. It's funny because, you know, a lot of times the people who think the clock is ticking are women who are in their early 20s and mid-20s, and they'll come in and say, oh my gosh, I'm going to be 28 next month, and, yeah, you know, I haven't gotten pregnant. And then meanwhile, we have couples who come in and, you know, she's 38 or 39, and she's thinking she's got all the time in the world because, you know, she was in line at the grocery store, and she sees that Celine Dion at her age is expecting twins, or, you know, so-and-so, you know, at 47, 48 is expecting a pregnancy, and they think, well, you know, my mom didn't go through menopause until she was 55. Doesn't that mean I can still get pregnant until I'm 54.
Boy, how true is that? And I think that this has really not been fair to women, because they have now, over the last 100 years, so to speak, have sought education, not getting married as a teenager, but putting marriage off until they find the right person. And then once they get educated, then they're in their careers and they want to build their career. And it's always kind of like, I need to do this before I really work on fertility. Well, unfortunately, you can't keep putting it off and putting it off. And this indecision becomes a decision.
Absolutely. Well, I think I don't want to interrupt, but we've got another caller on line one. I think we have Christy. Christy, are you there on line one? We were with Texas Fertility Center on Beyond the Birds and Bees.
Yes, sir.
How are you?
Just fine.
Well, good. Yeah, I think you have a question for us.
Yes, I have a question about seat warmers in cars.
Okay.
Do you think the seat warmers get too hot that could damage sperm?
Well, you know, that's really a great question. We know that, I'm trying to think not to be too technical about it, we know that testicles are located where they are for a reason. You know, women's ovaries are way up inside the body. And so they are exposed to what we call core temperature, which means, you know, even though your temperature, if you take a temperature with a thermometer, your temperature theoretically should be around 98.6. We know that your core temperature is slightly higher than that. Testicles, on the other hand, are suspended down in the scrotum, down outside the body. They are not exposed to core temperature, and in fact, they're exposed less. In fact, they're exposed more to ambient temperature, and a lot of studies have suggested that the temperature inside the scrotum is about a degree cooler than temperature inside the body. So we do know that there is an adverse effect on temperature on sperm production. So, for example, guys who work outside, a lot, especially in the Texas summer, certainly can have issues. We know that, what's the biggest sport in Austin? It's cycling. And so, these guys walk around in these tight cycling pants, and they're on these bikes with these seats that are not developed or designed by fertility specialists, I'll tell you that. And, they get exposed to pressure on the scrotum, pressure on the testicles, high temperature materials that don't breathe very easily. And we see guys who come in who cycle a lot who've got really lower sperm counts. Thomas, what do you think?
Interesting because several years ago when you had Dear Ann Landers and Dear Abby, they always said guys have got to get rid of the jockey shorts and wear boxers. And that's probably less of an issue, particularly for a guy that's working inside a building and air conditioning.
Sure.
But it does make sense to not increase the temperature of the testicle if you can. And I think the biggest thing is taking hot baths and hot tubs. I mean, after all, hot tubs like 107 degrees.
Right.
And so I had a couple really want to push, but he really likes a hot tub. And I was a little frustrated to say, his sperm count's really low, so we ought to do everything we can do and push the little guy. I said, okay, now if he can leave the testicles outside the hot tub and get in the hot tub, then it's okay.
You know, I really don't even want to think about that.
Don't try that one at home, right?
Right. But back to Christy's question, I think that it depends, for seat warmers, I think it depends on a couple of things. Number one, is your husband a truck driver? Is he a cross-country truck driver and he's in the truck all day long and he's exposed to higher temperature? In which case, I think that's really potentially a problem. But on the other hand, if, you're just getting in and out of the car for really short bursts of time in the winter, it's probably not that much of an issue. I think it's really what we're looking at is more longer-term exposure. There's no study that I can cite to you that says, 30 minutes is okay, but 45 minutes is not. But I think my intuition would tell me that if it's just, transient use, just for a few minutes here, a few minutes there, it's probably not a problem. But otherwise, I probably wouldn't use them. Does that help?
It does. And another question about the bicycle seat. Have you considered designing something for men who have fertility problems?
Well, if we could successfully design bicycle seats in Austin, Texas, I don't think we'd be practicing medicine because, oh my gosh, there's such a huge need. And there are lots of experts in the field. Interestingly, nobody's called us to ask us about it, which is surprising in light of the fact that so many of our couples are, these incredible athletes. I mean, I talked to a woman yesterday who was telling me that she was doing ultra marathons. And I said, okay, excuse my ignorance. What's an ultra marathon? The marathon thing I get, but an ultra marathon? And she told, she enlightened me and she said, well, it's 40 miles or 30 miles. I can't even remember. It was further than I would go. I would take a car if I was going that far. But anyway, Christy, I hope that helps. If you've got any other questions, if you can hang in on the other side of the break. Again, we are live in Austin, Texas on Saturday, June the 5th. We are Dr. Thomas Vaughn, Dr. Kaylin Silverberg from the Texas Fertility Center, and we're talking about Beyond the Birds and Bees on AM 1370. Again, if you have any questions, please call in at 390-1370.
Welcome back to Beyond the Birds and Bees on Austin's Talk 1370.
Well, hello again, and we are appreciative that you joined us after our break. I'm Dr. Kaylin Silverberg, and joining me today is Dr. Thomas Vaughn. We're from the Texas Fertility Center. Our show is called Beyond the Birds and Bees, and again, we're live on June the 5th, Saturday, June the 5th in Austin, Texas, where it's getting to be pretty hot outside, I think, already. Our call-in number, if you have any questions for us, is 390-1370. And Thomas, you want to pick up, I think, a little bit on that issue that we were talking about seat warmers just before the break.
Yeah, I believe Christy was our caller, and she had asked about seat warmers and affecting sperm production. The good thing in Texas is you don't use a seat warmer very often. It's pretty warm around
here.
That's
for sure.
But in the winter, you might. But I also think that individuals that use seat warmers, once they warm up in the car, they tend to turn these off. So it's probably less of an issue than we think. I remember in early days before some of the trucks were air conditioned and the seats were all vinyl. and these guys driving their trucks for long distances would actually be perspiring. That would be an issue because the testicles really trap between the legs and this vinyl seat. That would be an issue, and that's whenever they developed these things you'd sit on that had coils through them so air could circulate, not because of sperm production, I'm sure, but just to say to become more comfortable. And I suspect this is less of an issue now with cars air conditioned, and then also in the winter with the heaters turning on pretty quickly.
I suspect it is too, but especially in Central Texas. But I can tell you, in January or February, when I get in that car, that's the first thing I do is I reach for that knob and I just crank it up as high as it'll go until I can warm up a little bit.
Have you checked your sperm count?
I have not, but I have four kiddos that I think are pretty happy, pretty good instance. So anyway, I'll tell you one thing I wanted to move on to. We got a call during the break. There was a question about insurance coverage for infertility, and the question was, Does insurance pay for fertility testing?
Yeah, this is a great question, because there's some misinformation there. I will say that the majority of patients we see that have insurance, that they do have coverage for diagnosis of infertility. That means they can get through their basic evaluation and looking at sperm counts and ovulation and x-rays of the tube, make sure the tubes are open, and they have that coverage. There are some companies that do, I'm sorry, some employers that have elected to cover even in vitro fertilization. So it's very important that even if you don't think you have infertility coverage, you may have coverage for a diagnosis of infertility. And we have people in our office that are really trained in this area that can meet with our couples and help them understand their insurance.
Sure. In fact, we have a few employees actually who we were able to lure away from the insurance industry itself. So,
That's true.
We have a couple of people who really were on the inside and they know exactly what these insurance companies are looking for. And they know ways to code appropriately, of course. I mean, we never do anything inappropriate, but they know ways to code to increase coverage. But the second part of this question that we got during the break was, is infertility testing more likely to be covered if they go see their OB-GYN, or is there a difference?
It makes no difference. It's really the diagnosis and the procedure, whether it is a family physician, a gynecologist, or a reproductive endocrinologist doing the procedure.
Sure.
I do think we have a caller, Julia, on line one. What's your question, Julia?
Hi, I just had a comment. I wanted to just say I am a satisfied customer of Texas Fertility Clinic. And I've got a 2.5-year-old that runs the place.
Well, you are so sweet to call. And, we didn't put you up to this, did we?
No, you didn't. And I wanted to tell all the listeners, just listen to what Dr. Vaughn and Dr. Silverberg tell you to do, and it will happen.
I hope Kaylin's wife and my wife is listening, too.
Yeah.
Just listen to us all the time, and everything will be great.
Stay out of the hot tub. Quit riding the bike. Quit doing the ultra marathons. I mean, these people need to really be realistic about what it takes to have a baby.
Well, that's for sure. So how are you ultimately successful? Without giving too much personal stuff, how are you ultimately successful?
Oh, yeah, I'm totally open. I've gone through fertility 3 times. With my first 2 children, it was just a simple matter of Clomid. And then the 3rd time, I actually had to go through IVF, which really surprised me because I thought, since I already had 2 other kids, why do I need IVF?
Sure.
And then Dr. Silverberg did his whole, Vaughn did the whole straight talk thing and said, you have 41-year-old eggs. That's all that matters. We don't care how many kids you've had. And did his whole spreadsheet and the percentage chances and all this stuff. So, I did exactly what he told me. I followed, all the, when you take the shots, the hormones, all that stuff. And I got pregnant the 1st time.
That's great.
And I actually have 2 other embryos in storage right now.
That's great. Well, how old are your kids?
Well, now my kids are, the Clomid children are 9 and 7, and then the IVF little girl is 2.5.
That's great. Well, congratulations.
A household. A household.
A household, yes.
Yeah.
So I'm a big fan of you all, and I'll be happy to share my stories with any of your patients that need some
We might have you on the show every week. Is that okay?
Sure.
Well, spread the word and get your friends to call us at 390-1370 because we'd love to take their phone calls
and we'd
love to answer questions. So thank you so much for calling in, especially
You're
on
welcome.
Saturday.
Thanks,
Julie. You're welcome. Thank you.
You bet.
Bye.
Well, Thomas, let's get back to this to the second half of this question that we were asked during the break, and that is, why is it, the question was, is it more likely to be covered, is fertility testing more likely to be covered if my OB-GYN does it, or is it covered the same if you guys do it at Texas Fertility Center? Why would, your point is that it should be covered the exact same. Why is that?
Well, because it's according to the diagnosis and the procedure you're doing. And some people want us to, occasionally we'll ask, can it be coded differently? But like if you're doing an insemination, it is infertility and it has to be coded that way. But a lot of times you'll have patients that have uterine fibroids and they're also having trouble conceiving and the fibroids need to be removed. Well, that would be covered by insurance and considered medical, even though the patient also wants to be pregnant. So there are things that overlap.
When you say that something's considered medical, what does that mean? I mean, if I'm just a patient out there and I don't understand, what does it mean to be considered infertility or considered medical? Does my insurance company know the difference?
Yeah, I think sometimes they don't know the difference, but medical would imply that it's not a fertility diagnosis or not a fertility treatment.
So, therefore, it should be covered whether you're trying to get pregnant, whether you're not trying to get pregnant, it should be covered the exact same.
Exactly right.
And it should be covered whether a fertility surgeon does your surgery or whether your OBGYN does your surgery.
You know what? It doesn't matter for insurance who does it. It matters a lot the person do it in terms of success.
Sure.
I think that's really important, the people that are really focused on reconstructive surgery.
Yeah, we see that all the time. And, the reason that that's important to us is because the good reason that that's important to us and the way that we know this is because most of the OBGYNs in town are very comfortable doing basic surgery, especially, even for minimal endometriosis, things like that. But when they feel like there is a real problem, they've got a young woman who is really trying to get pregnant. She really wants to get pregnant. She's not getting pregnant. They see something on ultrasound. Most of the time, they refer those patients into us so the patient doesn't have to have one surgery where the OB-GYN diagnoses a problem and says, oops, this is more than I'm comfortable handling. Let me close you up, and then let me send you on to the fertility specialist, and they'll operate on you again because, as we know and as we tell our patients all the time, the only thing worse than being operated on once is being operating on twice.
Absolutely, and I think that's really important. Whenever when a couple or a woman undergoes a diagnostic laparoscopy, you really need to be prepared to be able to handle whatever you need to handle in there, whether it's fibroids that are difficult to remove, whether it's obstructed fallopian tubes and you need to unblock the tubes and do reconstructive surgery. That's really important. And particularly with fallopian tubes, we'll actually talk about this in great detail over the next several weeks, but you kind of have one shot at it.
Right, that's for sure. You get one chance to fix those tubes. And, I don't want to create any misconception out there or false impression that, you either have to see the OB-GYN or you have to see the fertility guys, because the way we work, Lisa and I talked about this last week, the way we describe it to our patients, it's like a relay race. We want the OB-GYN because that's who you've got your relationship with initially, and you're seeing them for your breast exam, you're seeing them for your pap smears, and we want them to be able to carry you as far around the track, that proverbial track, as they can carry you. But you know what? When they reach the dead end, when they reach the point at which they are no longer comfortable, we want them to take that baton and hand it to us. We'll help you get around the track. And the good news is that once you're around the track and once you're pregnant, and again, there's an 85 to 88% chance that you will be if you come to the office and stick with the plan, we take that baton, i.e. you, and we hand you right back to your OB-GYN. So, we are really extenders of the practices that your OB-GYNs have.
Yeah, I think that's really important. I mean, we said early in the show that we don't do pap smears, we don't do hysterectomies and procedures like that. We're just doing infertility. And I've been really impressed with the OB-GYNs in town that will send us patients and know that they're going to get the patient back once the patient is pregnant. And it's interesting, there's actually some data that says that it's more likely that that patient will go back if the patient's referred early.
Yeah, you're talking about this Copperman study, the big Copperman study, and it's exactly the way you're paraphrasing it, that they found very clearly when they surveyed women who had conceived in the office of a fertility specialist, the longer they were with their OB-GYN before they were referred to the fertility specialist, the less likely they were to want to go back. And, we get questions all the time about, I don't know if I'm going to go back to my OB-GYN. Do you guys have anybody else that you recommend? And fortunately in Austin, there's so many really good OB-GYNs. In fact, July 1st is approaching and we know there's a group of residents that are going to be graduating, from the Brackenridge OB-GYN program. And it's just incredible because we've got really good OB-GYNs moving to town all the time. And, you know, you've been here 25 years or so. I've been here 16 years. And we've got terrific relationships with the OB-GYN groups in town. And we're, I don't know if our listeners even understand how fortunate we are to be in Austin because we've got so many really, really good OB-GYN specialists in town.
I think that's, that is really true. And when a patient has hesitation to go back, we usually ask them to think about it, go and see if things are different. It may be completely different now that they're pregnant and not doing infertility, or then a lot of times that they'll just find somebody if they want to be somewhere else.
Sure. And in fact, you know, speaking of the OB-GYNs, we're going to start having guests on the show probably in the next month, month and a half. And we're going to try and twist some arms out there and get some of our referring OB-GYNs to come on the show with us. But anyway, I can't believe the hour's over. I mean, yeah. It's 4 minutes to one on Sunday or Saturday afternoon, June the 5th. Again, we've been live from Austin, Texas. Specialists from the Texas Fertility Center, Dr. Thomas Vaughn, Dr. Kaylin Silverberg. Our show's called Beyond the Birds and Bees. And I think that next week we're really going to talk. Well, why don't you lead into the show for next week, Thomas?
Yeah, next week we're going to focus on that fertility evaluation, the tests that you go through and tests that you don't need to go through.
Well, once again, thank you so much for listening in. We know everybody's got lots to do on Saturdays, especially a beautiful day like we have today in Austin. But thanks so much again for joining us on Beyond the Birds and Bees. Please check out our website, www.txfertility.com. And call the office, 512-451-0149. Have a great weekend, and thanks so much for joining us.
Talk Radio, 1370 AM.